All right, before we start the show, please turn off all cell phones and extinguish your cigarettes. Put your seats in an upright position and return your tray into the seat in front of you. I'd like to point out the exits. There's one over there, there's one over there, there's one behind me. In case of emergency, get the hell out of here.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, you gotta believe.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. That's part of my name. Get ready, I'm going to start immediately after this little tune. That's enough. All right. That's enough. Hey, welcome to the program. How you doing? Good to be with you on this fine day. Hey, relax. Come on, man. Sit back. Take your shoes off. Sit a spell. As I entertain you like some kind of little pathetic puppet, I shall be your jokester. I shall be your jester in the court of hell. I shall entertain you like a little man on a stick. Because that's my job. That's what I do. Am I a brain surgeon? No. Do I fix cars so that you can get to work and go on with your life? No, don't do that. No. Do I stand in a laboratory trying to cure all the horrible diseases of our time? No, I don't do that. No, I don't. Am I a teacher? My person who stands in front of a classroom of little people trying to force education into their little heads when all they really want to do is just sit there and vegetate. Do I do that for a living? No, I don't do that. No, I don't. Am I a philosopher who looks at life itself and tries to... No, I don't do any of that stuff. Am I a therapist who helps people get through their darkest and deepest problems so that they can exist in this turmoil and this Pandora of hellish fever? No, I don't do that. Am I a garment maker covering the very disgusting bodies of our times so when we walk down the street we look presentable to other people of our own types? No, I don't do that. Am I a pharmacist who stands behind a counter dispensing medication that keeps many of us alive on a daily basis? No, I don't do that. No. Well, then am I a doctor who... No, I don't do that either. No. Am I a dentist? No, hell no. No, I'm not a dentist. No. Well, then, Ron, what do you do? I'm a radio talk show host. I entertain people like a puppet. I am nothing, if anything, but a puppet. Through time, we've had humans entertaining other humans in order to bring some joy into their lives, to stimulate their thinking, to make life worth something, to connect us all as humans to other humans, noticing and appreciating the various problems. As we walk down the path of life, this journey together, I'm a man that helps us hold hands and gather together in an emotional and yet profound manner. I am that man. I'm a radio talk show host. Without me, there would be a void so deep and and so large that it could not be crossed otherwise. I am this man. The plight of a radio talk show host is difficult. You usually don't eat, you don't sleep. You get so involved in things in a theatrical sense in order to make them interesting when indeed they are not. This is a performance. It is nothing but showmanship, smoke and mirrors, hamburgers and French fries. Do you need an education to do this? No. Do you need fortitude and strength? No. All you need is a microphone and a little thing to record your voice on, and a radio station, and thousands upon thousands of listeners, and some type of salary so you don't starve to death. I am a radio talk show host.
It's like every burger joint that I go to is like, your cheese lover's burger, your bacon lover's burger, your burger lover's burger. What's a guy to do if you just love lettuce?
Well, you're in luck, because Burger Guy is proud to introduce the new Lettuce Extreme. A quarter of a quarter pound of succulent beef piled high with cool, crisp lettuce, iceberg, romaine, bib. It's a lettuce lover's dream, and it's only a Burger Guy.
Thanks, Burger Guy. Now I know where to go to get my lettuce on.
At participating Burger Guy locations for a limited time only. Supersize it with our metric ton of fries and keg of soda for just 12 cents extra. Price, participation, quality, condition, variety, and availability of lettuce may vary.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Not really. Not so much. Not as much as you think. It's not true. All right, here we go. Oh, you're looking good today, by the way. Did you do something with your face? You have makeup on? Seriously? Yeah, it looked pretty good. I hate makeup, but I can't tell it's makeup. Although, you don't have any eyebrows, do you? Those are painted on, aren't they? That's disgusting. What, do you wake up in the morning and say to yourself, I'm going to look incredibly surprised all day, so let me just paint these things in a rainbow effect. I feel nasty today. I feel mean. I feel rotten. I'm going to paint my eyebrows on, slanted down toward my nose. That's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to walk around all day with red shit on my lips. I'm going to look like my lips are bleeding. How about that? I'm going to walk around all day looking like my lips are bleeding. Like I just had a red apple with, like, red paint on it, and I didn't wipe my mouth off. That's what I'm going to look like. A vampire that just sucked the blood out of, like, 50 people. That's what I'm going to look like today. You know who wears a lot of makeup? Jennifer Lopez. I don't know what the fuck she looks like. I mean, she is just like a walking circus clown. There's nothing underneath that thing. Did you ever see Jennifer Lopez without any makeup on? Well, I did. I slept with her. She was not good, by the way. There are a lot of actresses that I don't think are pretty that other people do. Yeah. That Andy McDowell, which is, by the way, is a woman. I mean, if you're a woman, like, why would your parents name you Andy? You know, like, my real name is Andrew. Yeah, but you're a woman. That's weird. Why would you be Andy? Anyway, she looks like she walked into a wall and nobody told her the wall was coming up. You know what I'm saying? It's just not looking real good, but yet she's like in these commercials for pretty girls. I mean, she's not. Julia Roberts, I don't get that either. I don't get it. She's not pretty. She proved she wasn't pretty. She married Lyle Lovett at one point. I mean, that's just throwing it all away. That, I mean, Lyle's probably a really nice guy, probably very entertaining and very talented, but whoa, oh my God, the horse looks better. So together they made a fairly ugly couple as far as I'm concerned, but bless their hearts, bless their little hearts. Why do the Kardashians always marry out of their race? I mean, I've always wondered about them. Not that it matters. I think that's good. I'm just saying. I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I have lived a long time, ladies and gentlemen. I have been on this planet for quite an extended period of time, and I plan with the graces of whatever to go on much longer. I hope it do. But there's as long as I have lived, which is now 23 years, seriously, Ron, you're going to say you're 23 years old? I didn't say that. All right. I didn't say that. I didn't say 23 years in a row. Oh, okay, fine. There's one phenomenon that I can't understand. I understand the misgivings of other people. I understand other people's religions. I understand their feelings, their thoughts. I even understand horrible bad people who are all messed up. I get how they could have gotten there, how their minds could have been ruined, how their attitudes are misshapen, but I understand why, and I don't begot them. I don't know what I just said. But there's one thing that I do not understand, and it's not being a vegan. No, you might think it's that, but it's not. I mean, why you want to walk around and just eat vegetables and look like you're turning yellow and that you're on your deathbed? Why you think that's a healthy thing? I don't know. Eating soy and that tofu stuff apparently isn't great for you. So plant-based, you know, there's bad plants, let's face it. Not that you should go around eating animals, killing animals and eating them. That's also a bad thing. And I have a very guilty conscience about that. And I'm going to have to deal with that probably someday, maybe next Wednesday. So I'm not proud of myself. But I think it's good not to be proud of myself, because if I was proud of myself, I would act like Donald Trump, who can't do anything wrong, can't say anything wrong, is never wrong. This phenomenon of Donald Trump is what I just don't understand. And I know probably a lot of you are like in love with Donald Trump and think that he is the best thing on earth since French whores. I don't know how to put it any more delicately. He is, I don't understand how anybody can be so enraptured by this Antichrist. I don't get it. All I understand is that Donald Trump represents the anger in all of us. I'm angry too, but I wouldn't vote for a piece of shit. And I'm not saying Donald Trump is a piece of shit. I'm insinuating that he is. The man is nothing but a schoolyard bully, and yet we applaud him. We back him for calling people names, calling them fat, calling them ugly, calling them moronic. Making fun of people with disabilities. And you may think, oh, Ron, he wasn't doing that. He didn't know that reporter. And when he stood up at the pulpit in some type of one of his rallies, and he mocked a reporter who happens to be handicapped. And Trump stood up there and went, you should see this reporter. He's flailing his arms, Trump is doing. And Trump says, well, I didn't know he was handicapped. Then why did you say he looks like this and then start doing that? Why would you say he looks like this? Donald Trump is a liar because he's never wrong. He lies his way out of things. He makes things up, and then he says he never says he's wrong. He says, "Well, I didn't make it up. I know I saw it, and I'm never wrong, and I have a memory like a pig." I don't know. I don't know if that's a good analogy. I don't want to get into all the Trumpisms. I've done a show on him before, and it was a waste of time. Because the man can't be hurt. You can't attack the man. The man could stand there and say, "I'd like to fuck every female and just leave her in a gutter somewhere. And I'm running for president. Vote for me." And the woman would say, "Yeah, that is pretty cool. All right, all right, all right, Donald." Donald can't say anything to hurt himself. There's no candidate that can say anything about Donald that can hurt him. And it's getting pretty scary. Donald Trump could never be president of the United States. His base is about 25 to 27% of the Republicans. That means, and if you do the math correctly, that means that way over 60% of Republicans want to see Donald Trump not be president and not get the Republican nomination. They think that would destroy the entire Republican Party, and the new large party would be both the Democrats and the Whig Party, of which Donald Trump really should be part of the Whig Party, but that's a whole nother story. So it's scary to the Republicans. It's definitely scary to the Democrats. The Democrats are applauding this. Donald, go, go. Just hand us the election, the Democrats say. And that would be the case. There's no question about it. There's no arguing about it. Republicans even admit that. But this 25, 27% of the Donald Trump base, he can't do anything wrong. They will support him through hell and high water, no matter what he says, no matter what he does, no matter how he expresses himself, no matter what mistakes he may make, and no matter what personality flaws he may have. But 25, 27% of the Republican Party is not going to win you the presidential election. So the man really, at this point, I got to tell you, should actually be dropping out, this Donald Trump guy. Donald is doing it because he loves the crowds. Donald is a businessman, successful perhaps, successful only because he uses certain methods in order to gain his success. You know that's the case. You can't be an angel and be that successful in real estate and business. So he's shrewd, he's conniving, yeah. But again, doesn't make any difference. He's angry, he gets in front of a crowd of people, he gets their panties in a bunch, and they say, "Yeah, I can connect with this guy, Donald Trump. He's getting our panties in a bunch, and my panties are in a bunch, and my God, we've got bunching panties together." So that base will never leave. And if you're part of that base, whatever, you know, whatever. I guess we don't have to understand each other totally all the time, I guess. But it's like one of the few things in my life that I can't wrap my head around his popularity, other than what I've just explained to you, that he is a preacher and an evangelistic preacher of things suck. He's on the things suck tour. He doesn't look to the future. He only takes the present, turns it into theatrical spotlights, and he works off of what's going on right now and everybody's dissatisfaction. And you can always find dissatisfaction in everything. You can. How long have you been married? You've been married for a while? How long have you been with your boyfriend, your girlfriend? For a while? Okay. Things are all right? Yeah, things are good. We're in a good relationship, Ron. Okay. I'm going to stand in front of you now and I'm going to tell you how bad your relationship is. Did your wife do this for you? Does your husband do this for you? Does your husband look at you like that? Does this, do that, do that? Well, no, they don't. Well, no, they don't. Well, I guess your relationship isn't that good then, is it? Well, no, I guess it's not. Could be better, couldn't it? Yeah, I guess it could, Ron. You understand me. Nobody else does. That's what happens, man. This guy's nothing but an entertainer. And Donald Trump loves it. And you can see that when he gets on these stages in front of thousands of people, you can see in his eyes that he is bathing in this adulation. Not only does Trump have self-adulation, but he needs the adulation of the crowd. He is a true performer in the sense that he needs to feel validated every second of his life. Every waking moment, and even in his dreams, Donald Trump needs to be validated like a parking ticket. He is Mr. Validation. And if you say anything wrong about him, he'll say, "You're wrong, because thousands of people love me, because I am validated every second of my life." And this is the Donald Trump legacy. It is. All right, that's enough. I've spent way too much time on this awkward gentleman who definitely is not invited in my world.
Like anyone would be, I am flattered by your fascination with me. Like any hot-blooded woman, I have simply wanted an object to crave. But you're not allowed, you're not invited, an unfortunate slight.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. Fuck you. You're listening to the fucking Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. I didn't even say anything that time.
We're going to talk to now to a gentleman that he's a photographer, and he has done a book which is incredible, and you might want to pick this up for a loved one or for yourself. With the horrible situation in Paris, this comes out not as a result of that. The book came out well before these Paris attacks took place. The book celebrates some of the most incredible landmarks in Paris with the most incredible pictures and photography. And it's centered on the bridges of Paris. It's romantic and incredible. Let's speak to Gary here. We're saying hello to Gary Zerker, and we welcome him to the New England area. Gary Zerker has written a book called The Glow of Paris, The Bridges of Paris at Night. And obviously, when we had booked this interview, situation was different. Now, of course, Paris becomes quite a spotlight, limelight situation. Gary, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
This is a beautiful book, photographs and such, an amazing story and introspection into the city lights in Paris. And here we are talking about Paris in the news. Has this affected anything since you wrote the book?
Well, it hasn't affected the book, obviously. Right. Yes. We both, my wife and I both just got back from Paris last week, so we weren't there when this happened, but right. Our friends were, and they're shocked and saddened and full sure. of sorrow.
This book celebrates the lights of Paris. And for those who have been there, such as myself, I mean, it's just an amazing book. The photographs are incredible. What gave you the idea of doing this?
Well, it actually started with a mistake. I was out shooting black and white one night in Paris. Mm-hmm. I took a photo of the Alexander III Bridge, and I mistakenly greatly overexposed it. I realized after I'd taken the photo that I overexposed it, and I decided to try to save it. But under developing it, I did, and I ended up with a picture that took my breath away. So from that mistake, I decided to shoot all 35 of the bridges at night and actually make a project out of it.
Wow. And then I guess you would have to get into the research of the bridges themselves, which you did.
Yeah, I did. I didn't have that in mind at first. When I got 4.5 years into the project, I wondered what I was going to do with it after it was done and decided to do a book. And at that point, I thought, wow, just the photographs by themselves, they're great, but why not make it better and do the history of the bridges?
Wow. And that involves some of the hidden treasures of Paris, I understand, that only the locals know about, that you bring to light in the book as well.
That's right, except the hidden treasures, most of the locals don't even know about them.
Oh.
It's amazing how much they don't know about the bridges, and it's amazing how much I didn't know before I started the research after shooting. Yeah.
I guess one might say the same about the bridges of New York City, that people cross them every day and think they know a little bit of the history and have seen little newsreels, but probably don't know the real stories behind them.
No, that's right. That's really right. There's so many stories that, and that's really what helps make the book a very interesting book, in addition to beautiful photographs, if I may say so myself.
Yeah. Gary, what is it about Paris that just makes it so different and is so enchanting?
That's a tough question in a way. Paris has such a long history. Actually, the history of the bridges is long, too, because the first bridges were described in 52 BC by Julius Caesar in his chronicles of the Gallic Wars. Mm-hmm. There's a heritage, there's a history, there's a beauty. Paris is a special city, and it is unrivaled by any other city in the world.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How much time do you actually spend there? Do you go there frequently?
Oh, I live there half the time.
Oh.
My wife is French.
Oh.
We live there just a little bit less than half the time. So,
wow.
So we're there quite a bit.
Wow. Now, as a professional photographer, give me some insight into Gary. I mean, and how do we get to this point?
Well, photography was a secondary vocation of mine.
Yeah.
My primary vocation was I started businesses and I built them, divested them, and then started other businesses.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, I did professional photography on a commercial basis for advertising agencies and companies. The business was the thing that made money, and the commercial photography was the thing that made satisfaction, if you will.
How long have you been doing the commercial photography?
A little over 35 years.
Wow. So let me ask you a question that I haven't really asked a photographer yet. I'm somewhat in the business myself in video sense. Photography, when it went from film to digital, kind of changed the landscape. Do you have a romantic connection still to film?
Everything I shot in this book was on film.
Oh.
In black and white.
Oh, my God.
Silver gelatin prints.
Oh.
Yeah, silver gelatin prints. I developed the film myself in a dark room in Paris.
So cool.
And I did the printing of the photographs myself in a dark room in Washington, D.C. So, yes, I do have a connection to the traditional method.
See, to me, that brings the book into like a whole nother level of incredible when you tell me that part of it. I mean, I guess I can appreciate that part of it, but that makes it even more amazing.
Well, you know, if you take a digital camera and you go out and shoot, you can just click, 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 click.
Yeah.
But with film, as you know, you know, I had about 3,000 negatives to choose from on this project. But, you know, if you were shooting with a digital camera, you'd probably have 20,000.
Yeah.
But 3,000 is a tremendous number because you have to develop the film.
Yeah. See, to me, that's like the difference between sitting down and reading a book and going online and reading something on a screen. It's same kind of thing to me. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
The book obviously now has greater meaning to people all over the world. And I'm sure that it's going to become a keepsake in that sense, certainly not what you had intended, but it does become all of a sudden just something that would be near and dear to people. So congratulations to you. Go on. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, for anybody that's been to Paris, it certainly brings back memories, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah. The glow of Paris, the bridges of Paris at night is really so much more than the bridges. It's a feeling, and this book expresses that. Congratulations to you, and continued success.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Gary, well, just before we leave, is there a website where we can follow your adventures, et cetera?
Yes. The book obviously can be found at Amazon.com, right. But my website has the book also, and I'll sign it if people buy it at the website. It's GLZ.com, and the way I tell people to remember that is, remember Good Luck Zebra, GLZ.
Very cool. And you sign the book if you buy it online. That is extremely cool. Gary, it's a pleasure speaking to you today.
It's been a pleasure being with you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. He's a cool guy, isn't he?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm sorry, he's still there. Is he gone? He is? Okay. Thank God I said he's a cool guy. what a schmuck, huh? What? I'm sorry. No, you're still there. No, he's a cool guy. I got to do something before the end of the show here. I got to tell you that I have one problem with Obama. Well, I have a few problems with Obamacare. I'm glad there is Obamacare, but it was executed incorrectly and poorly. This website shit has got to go. I mean, you can't rely on websites to take care of something important. Let's face it. I can't even buy bus tickets without having them screwed up by the time the tickets print. I mean, websites are, especially government websites, are awful. They're just awful. And that's been proven. And, of course, that was the case with the Obamacare website or National Health, whatever you call the damn thing. Here's my problem. Any government program that has a deadline scares the hell out of me. If there's a deadline on something that you need to do, there shouldn't be deadlines. If you want to enroll in Obamacare, there's a deadline for that. And then after that, I don't know what happens. I guess you just die. I mean, why are there deadlines? What is this deadline crap? I don't even like the word deadline. It's got the word dead in it. I mean, if you don't do it by this date, you're going to be dead. What? Deadline? There's a deadline for Medicare, to get your supplemental Medicare stuff, sign up for Medicare. The deadline is, I believe, December 7th. I'm not sure. We're going to talk to a guest about that. But there's a deadline involved, and it shouldn't be deadlines. You should be able to do this thing at any time, any day. Screw the deadlines. Anyway, there is a deadline, and it's my duty, because a lot of seniors listen to this program, believe it or not. I have no idea why, because I'm a little bit insulting, but nonetheless, they do. They do listen. So there is a deadline involved here, so we need to talk about it. Patrick Conway is going to talk about the Medicare enrollment right now. Patrick Conway joins us. He's an MD, MS, Deputy Administrator and Chief Medical Officer, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That's a long title. You must have a really big business card.
Yes, Ron. They keep giving me more jobs for the same amount of money.
Okay. It's that. Okay. That's different. All right. So for those that are signing up or dealing with Medicare, I get confused. We're in an open enrollment season. Is that what this is?
Yes. So we're in open enrollment for Medicare right now, which means Medicare beneficiaries and their family can look at their options. They can choose traditional Medicare, or they can choose a health plan, a Medicare Advantage plan, for their health plan coverage. They can also buy prescription drug plans to cover their medication.
Okay. So there's Medicare, and then there's supplemental beyond the Medicare. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so if you choose traditional Medicare, which is called Part A and B services, you can buy a supplemental insurance coverage.
Okay.
Your other main option is to select a health plan, which is called a Part C plan, and or a drug plan, which is a Part D plan for drugs. So really want beneficiaries to look at those options.
Okay. See, it sounded so easy. I thought that when I turned a senior, I would just say, okay, now I'm on Medicare, thank you. But it's not like that, is it?
Yeah, so, you know, it's we try to have plan comparison tools and other things for beneficiaries and their family. My own in-laws are in the Boston market and spoke to them, their Medicare beneficiaries, and spoke to them about this over Thanksgiving. And, you know, really the main point, which is the same thing I told them over Thanksgiving, is to look at Medicare.gov, check out your options, and make a choice that meets your needs.
Okay. All right. Is there someone to speak to, like yourself, if I have questions? I know that, see, seniors are, they're not entirely computer savvy, and I think you know that. And they love to make a phone call. Is there a way to do that?
There is. So the local phone number is 1-800-AGE-INFO, so A-G-E info. And they can call and speak directly. We have what's called SHIP counselors, but they're people that can walk them through their options at a local level.
Excellent.
So they can also call 1-800-MEDICARE, which will get them to the national office as well. So those are a couple in-person options for Medicare beneficiaries and their families.
Very, very good. Now, the deadline, as I understand, is December 7th. Is that right?
That is correct.
And
so,
what happens if you miss it?
If you don't, so if you don't select a choice, if you're already a Medicare beneficiary, then you'll stay in traditional Medicare.
Okay.
If you're a new beneficiary, especially, we encourage people entering the program to look at their options and make an active choice.
Okay. So let me understand: if you already are on the system and you have a supplemental and you don't want to change anything, just go have a sandwich, you're good. If you want to make a change to the supplemental, do it by December 7th, or if you haven't enrolled yet at all, do that by December 7th.
Yes. So, you know, we want everybody to take a look and make a choice by December 7th, including, you know, I'd even say, even if you're already on traditional Medicare and you have supplemental insurance, I would encourage my own mother to take a to look online and consider, you know, is that the best plan for her health needs for the next year? Just like everyone else, you know, I made a health plan choice for my own family during open enrollment just recently. So it's important to understand the options, both the quality of the various health plans and the cost of the health plans.
Okay. And there's no clear choice. In other words, there are so many options to everything these days. How do you know if you're making the best choice?
Yeah, so I would encourage people to go to Medicare.gov. Mm-hmm. We have something called Plan Finder. It also talks about the difference between traditional Medicare and the various health plans.
Good.
And if you decide to choose a health plan, it actually has a plan comparison tool where you can look at the various copays and deductibles and quality ratings for the health plans.
Okay. Just out of interest sake, is this are these years like the most seniors ever?
Yeah, so the Medicare program keeps growing every year. So we add about 10,000 beneficiaries every single day. And about 32%, about a third, choose health plans. So choose Medicare Advantage health plans, and about two-thirds are in traditional Medicare.
Uh-huh.
And the numbers that are choosing health plans has been going up every year.
Uh-huh.
Prescription drug coverage, too. The Affordable Care Act closed the donut hole.
Yes.
So for those beneficiaries, many of them take many medicines. Prescription drug coverage can be critically important for them.
Yes. I think we all know that what that's about, even if you're not a senior. You pretty much can appreciate that part of it. Okay.
Definitely.
All right. You've given us a lot of different places to go and the deadline and various ways in order to hook up, both by phone and by website. So I guess we're good. And now everybody knows. And, of course, tell your elders that this is a situation. Double check and make sure that they've acted upon it or are happy with what they have, whatever the case may be. So it's not just for seniors, it's for their kids to participate as well and make sure it gets done.
Yes, definitely.
Perfect. Hey, Patrick, thank you so much for your time today. And we'll speak in the future, I suppose.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Cute. Well, there you go. There's your deadline. Quickly. Do it. Quickly. Hurry. It's a deadline. Hate deadlines. It sounds very, dictatorship-wise. You have 2 minutes to live. Anything you want to say, you have 2 minutes. Oh. That's my deadline. That's my line of death. Here's a line that I have drawn in the sand. The sands of time are ticking through the hourglass. That's your deadline. It's all over when the deadline arrives. We don't extend any time in the deadline. It is a line of death that shall not be crossed by human man or human woman or woman of man. Or a man who thinks he's a woman or a woman who becomes a man or a man who becomes a woman like Bruce Jenner. It's for everybody. Line. Goodbye. Okay, now the epilogue. This is the epilogue portion of the program where I continue to talk for a short period of time and then the show's really over. It's reached the deadline. Here's the epilogue. Did you enjoy the show today?
It was unbelievably painful.
Okay. Will you tune in tomorrow to hear another new show? Will you be excited about joining me again tomorrow?
Whatever.